Hey, it's Elisa Monjadas, Managing Director of Stories Bureau, and this is my co-host, Creative Director of Stories Bureau.
Hey, everyone, I'm Corey Grushka, and this is B2B Creatively, where we want to talk about all things B2B creative, from trends to best practices, campaigns that succeeded.
So that all of us together can learn how to B2B creatively.
If you're a marketer, you'll learn how to be more creative, and if you're a creative, we're going to make you more strategic.
Well, Corey, what is this, third attempt, fourth attempt at starting a podcast?
Yeah, at least the third, I'd say.
I mean, when I met you, but like before we started Stories Bureau, you were like, let's do podcasts. And then we started doing these for Fortune 500s. And we're like, we need our own. We're so excited. And then like, what happened? That was like 3 years ago.
That was 3 years ago. We tried to launch our own. You know, I think we've planted a flag that it's one of the most important emerging channels out there. But we didn't succeed in launching. When we tried the first time or the second, maybe the third, right?
Yeah. It's like, what is it? The cobbler's kids have no shoes.
Exactly.
And I mean, I guess some might say, we could say those are failed attempts. I wouldn't go so far as to calling us failures, because here we are again. Like, what do they say? Try again when you fail. I really should have researched that for our first episode. But it does like bring me to the idea of failure in B2B marketing. Like, we see it all the time. And I feel like most of our job is preventing failure for our clients.
And I think the cobbler's children is the perfect analogy, because I feel like everyone talks about the failure of agencies to do their own social media. I mean, if you look at the social media accounts for your favorite agencies, they're not very highly populated with high engagement, because they want it to be perfect. You know, they're like, we do social media, we do podcasting. Our podcast.
Yeah, but if we're going to do it for ourselves, it needs to be the best.
We have to nail it. And I think that's the trap we fell into. We tried a few times, and I think at this point, we've locked the positioning. We kind of know who we are a little bit, and I think we're ready to go. We might fail, but I guess we'll have to see, huh?
Corey, I feel like part of doing business is failing over and over again. And you and I have like been doing
it.
Stories for...
We've nailed it, Elisa.
We're so good
at failing. We crush, yeah.
Yeah, and the cool thing about it is we're not alone. We're not the only agency that's like tried something and it hasn't worked. There are plenty of people, not even just agencies, but whole businesses that do things that don't work or don't start things because they're afraid of it not working. And I recently was talking to another agency managing director, and I was on his podcast, and we talked a little bit about it because it was like his third or fourth attempt as well. And I thought it'd be fun to bring him in and figure out like, okay, where have you failed? And then how do we deal with that with our clients?
I'm pumped. Yeah. Kindred spirits.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Bayless. I'm the managing director and co-founder of Filament and host of the B2B Tech Marketing Talks podcast. Similar to you, there was lots of debate and discussion around how to position it and how compelling to get and how to brand it up, and just went with something hyper pragmatic, and it says what it does, and it's not creative at all as a result, but therefore effective. And yeah. Let's talk podcasting, and hopefully mine's not failing.
I have a question. Jeremy, what's your take on podcasting as a channel and B2B in general, I guess, and your experience as a podcaster?
Yeah, I think podcasting as a medium or as a channel tends to be thought of in the context of the really, really successful podcasts. And they tend to be hyper-present across social media channels, and they've gotten really good at accelerating the volume of content that each podcast produces such that it's constantly in your feeds as well if you're following them. And I think that's warped the mentality of what's possible with podcasts over time, as those who are doing it as a business end or as a route to market have swayed sort of the view of it. So for us, really, I think the goal was to just do it in the first instance. And I think that goal and that vision for it alone is why it's a success, because the podcast exists. I mean, that was the first goal. And similar to your previous podcasts, we went through a very, very long period of wanting to do this, for planning it, probably over-planning it, over-engineering too much. And then, as is wont, because it's within your control, doing way too much research and way too much weighing up gear.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Options. And thankfully, I'm not alone in this, because we tend to only want to look at what is directly in front of us. And I've formed the view, in hindsight, it's similar to starting a business and trying to perfect your email signature rather than going out and finding clients and getting the business card right before going out and selling. And so the desire to do a podcast had been around for a very long time. Actually, where it started is someone from a SaaS company in the States put a call out to say, we're doing a podcast, we need guests, put your hand up. And oh man, I put my hand up so fast. That gave me a really good experience of being on a podcast as a guest and then just pulling the trigger and making this thing happen, regardless of whether it's going to be perfect or not, and jumping in fearlessly and not caring about perfectionism anymore with that regard, and just going. So it's kind of a backstory of needing to stop the planning and just ship.
I feel like there's a pressure, and you guys can tell me what you think. As a marketer, you have to have the whole plan. You can't just tell your CMO, like, hey, by the way, I'm going to start a podcast and we're just going to hit record because we listened to this B2B podcast and these three experts were like, just start. A CMO is going to be like, no, like, what are the channels? Where are you advertising? How much time is this going to take? How is this connecting to our campaigns? So, like, there's a little bit of perfectionism and planning that like has to happen. Let me put this to Jeremy. Like, how do you balance out? Like, here we have to have like a cohesive plan, but then like also you have to start.
We're not talking about starting without planning. What we're talking about is over planning in the details that are ultimately inconsequential, or over-planning in the details that ultimately inhibit or prohibit you to be able to implement a sustainable process. So there still needs to be a plan. So if I reflect back on our planning, we've got a very specific target audience. It's a channel marketer or a marketing manager who is working in B2B tech. And they have very unique and specific problems that they face. They have pressures, and they are juggling a whole range of things on a day-to-day basis. They're not ultimately the decision maker that works with us or signs off on the contract or agreement that they engage us on. But we felt that there would be, in this hyper-focused, tiny prospective audience of potential podcast listeners, that was a little just broad enough for us to put something out there when our actual target persona or buyer probably isn't listening to these types of podcasts, either because they don't have time or because they're not concerned about the mechanics of implementing a channel marketing plan. They're signing off on the construct of it and they're managing systems for it to occur. So we needed to go somewhere below that. So there's a thought process around the plan, but we needed to not allow that to inhibit getting content to market.
Yeah, it's about perfection, right? It's about like not allowing yourself to fall into the trap of over planning. You, of course, are going to have some level of understanding of what your buyer personas are and the channels through which you're going to market, whether it is a podcast or whatever the content series is going to be. But it's just like, especially with podcasting, because it's so intimate and it's so personal. And I think because it's long form, But just the opportunity to build an audience in this way. And I think any B2B company, it's such an advantage compared to like some narrative documentary style podcast about surfboards. Like if you're a B2B company, if you build enough of a platform as a podcast, you pick and choose who you want to speak to in the whole industry for an hour at a time. Elisa, your famous quote was, I don't know what it is exactly, but it's like one podcast is like five business dinners, sales dinners. You know what I mean? And it's so true.
I've quoted this multiple times to people since you said that.
Yeah.
That concept profoundly changed the thought process on our end, even in terms of our own outreach, giving us the ability to get in front of people that are meaningful to us, but come at it from a point of view that is deeply empathic and empathetic towards their day-to-day and allowing them to really shine, which is something that you rarely get, if at all. These people are hyper-intelligent executives who have gotten to where they've gotten to through decades of high performance. And they are so good at what they do that it is often or normally the case that they are directing and they are managing and they are overseeing and they are signing off on implementation and so on. But they are very rarely sought out in this advisory capacity to talk openly about what they're facing or how they're managing or even talking about how they, through their own experiences, have picked up these tips and tricks to navigate scenarios. No one gets that opportunity. And so for the right people and the right guests and the right personalities, it's an amazing opportunity for them to shine. And the tangential benefits for them are personal brand related as well as brand positioning for their company. But the tangential benefits for you as a podcast host or podcast publisher means that you're not just positioning yourself on the forefront of particular topics, but you're also able to use that tactically as the means of deepening relationships with that organization or to use that as a foot in the door in similar organizations, or if you're being pragmatic, as a foot in the door into competitor organizations to say, hey, this is what I did for these guys. Let's start a conversation in a similar capacity on your views or how can we start even potentially working together? You know, at the end of the day, we as marketers, depending on the medium, are effectively in the business of trust. Trust is the most paramount currency in this. And a podcast is high trust inducing because it's in order to be authentic and to have the conversations that you just mentioned we had, Elisa, that empathy elicits trust. And that's powerful. You can't get that in an email.
Yeah, I still have relationships with people I interviewed over 80 episodes ago. And were those episodes awesome? Not really, because I was just starting.
Yeah.
But do I still have those relationships? Absolutely.
I think it's also important to remember, in the context of failure that we're heading towards, this is not the only medium that requires a long-term commitment to have compounding benefits over time. But we forget that because non-marketing leadership requires immediate return when it's often not possible for any medium because it's just not how people buy.
Yeah. And it's also new media. It's not this established channel that everybody understands the ROI and the timelines and the
I mean, KPIs. I would argue that most non-marketing executives don't understand anything. Sorry to whoever's listening. But like,
we'll keep this away from the non-marketing executives.
I'm going back to, you know, my days working in marketing and like even traditional marketing that's been around forever, there's always people somewhere in your organization, they're going to be like, well, what are the results today? I feel like that's the bane of our existence as marketers.
Yeah.
Jeremy, have you had to help any of your clients like make a case for any of your initiatives? Or do you feel like there's like some kind of understanding that your clients have with their stakeholders?
I think it depends on the relationship. The project-based or campaign-based clients we come into contact with or work with generally need to see some form of immediate result. And we've taken a view that we need to be explicit around expectation setting with our clients. And I think that's why we formed such long-term relationships with them is we're not yes men and we're not selling something off the shelf. We're thinking really hard strategically to assist them. And if they're looking for short-term gains, our advice tends to be on tactics that have a higher propensity to deliver short-term gains, but the return on that tapers off so fast. There's no compounding benefits. There's no audience build. There's no ongoing engagement. It's a very quick sugar hit.
What's a long form initiative like that you're thinking of? Like, what are the categories of initiatives that you've seen have been really successful when people do it right?
Brand. I think that is the number one missed opportunity in the business landscape across the board. You know, we've been talking about tactical channels of reaching audiences and engaging with them. I believe the businesses that have been and are going to cut through in ways that their competitors can't and won't is they are getting hyper articulate around what their brand means in actuality to their prospective buyers or customers. And let's take B2B tech, for example. You have a lot of B2B tech companies who are all competing, and a lot of these service providers are all members of the same channel programs, and they are all building kit on top of the same platforms, or they're reselling the same cloud solutions. Maybe in the details there's some differentiation, and maybe someone on the buying side can understand what that difference means. But by and large, those who are really getting cut through are the ones who are understanding that we as a brand and the people who represent that brand and the values that are infused within our service delivery and customer service excellence as a result of focusing on brand are able to meaningfully differentiate themselves in a market that is just setting themselves on a course that their competitors can't match because they're increasing their Google Ads spend. And that's their strategy. You know, the guys who are investing in brand are just advancing in a way that their competitors can't match.
That is an awesome kind of segue into like the core of what this podcast is in part, which is, you know, it's called B2B Creatively. And I think the goal for us is to really highlight great creative, speak to great creative executions, what works, what doesn't from a creative perspective in B2B, how has B2B evolved? And so I love that you said brand first, because like, how do you break through and invest long-term in brand in a way that allows you, like you said, to eventually discontinue digital ad spend because your brand is leading the category at such a level, right?
I believe that we cannot separate out silos within brand in a way to say that elements of a business are more important than the other. I think the brand, to strategically go about developing and expanding brand and reach and the strategy therein, means that there is an articulate vision around how you are specifically and meaningfully resolving pain points of your customers in a way that they can understand and perceive and attach value to. And a failure to do so means that your company will be differentiating on features or minor benefits, or you're exploiting some kind of gap in the market, or you're rushing a service to market because you've had something fall in your lap. But I think in the context of B2B creative or B2B in general, you know, the landscape has shifted so demonstrably away from marketing to businesses being some kind of third person, generic, general, having a product
Here's
and then
a
selling
paper.
It by its spec sheet, yeah, or even a white paper. And it's moved forcefully into a space, and the visionary marketers are grabbing onto this, that people are buying from people, and we need to speak to them specifically. And we need to create, and this is new language for me that I've adopted this year, we need to move away from touch points. We need to move into the space where we're creating meaningful moments with people. And those meaningful moments include podcasts. If you can engage people in a way that is speaking to them directly, where they believe that this is specifically published for them, not in some esoteric way, but in terms of speaking directly to what they face on a day-to-day basis, that is meaningful. And that's creating this notion of connectivity. And that helps facilitate your advancement within an organization. If you're in B2B, where whether you have a single decision maker or whether there's a buying committee, that you're able to expand what you mean to them, not because you had some awesome feature, but because you are eliminating frustrations and issues that are inhibiting them or holding them back or are causing them to expend too much budget on something that you're able to reduce. And the guys who are doing that are just winning.
We want our clients to win. And it sounds like no matter what tactics you're using, if you know who you are as a company, and we're talking about brand, your positioning, what problems you're solving, it doesn't really matter the nuances, because everything comes back to you and those connections. And as you said, meaningful moments that you create. So whether you create meaningful moments through webinars, podcasts, blogs, there's so many opportunities for brands to create those moments, but they can't do it if they don't know who they are or what they're trying to say and who they're talking to. And it sounds so basic, but I really feel like that is a surefire way to win.
If you have a strong brand that is advancing in a way that is engaging people in the way that they want to be engaged in, no one is paying attention, really, unless they're already in some form of solution-finding mode. They've already uncovered that they've got an issue and they're out researching. That already means you need to be found somehow and you need to stand out from the rest. Giving people the understanding that the brand and the go-to-market of that brand is the most powerful differentiator, because your competitors simply aren't doing it, is the best place to start. And from there, as you rightfully pointed out, the tactics come and go, the trends come and go, the way that you implement comes and goes, the different pressures that you face, the different personalities that have different views that you need to negotiate, economic life cycles change, but the brand, when implemented the right way and in this engaging way, rides and cuts through all of that because you're engaging people on a personal level.
That's good stuff. I mean, like, I want to continue this conversation straight up. Like, I have like three other points that I'd like to dig into right now, but I just can't. We have to wrap up or I'm going to get smashed by our producer,
Alexandra.
I can
feel myself wanting to say so many other things.
I see in the chat, that's a wrap. Alexandra's like, that's a wrap. So to be continued.
Awesome. I'll see you on the next one.
Thank you.
B2B Creatively is powered by Stories Bureau. This episode was produced by Alexandra Uresta with help from Mather DeLeon. It was engineered and mixed by Tim Ballant and edited by Joshua Ramsey. If you like what you hear, go follow Stories Bureau on LinkedIn, where Elisa, Corey, and the rest of the team are dishing out tips all week long. Or maybe check out storiesbureau.com. Sign up for our newsletter, and that'll keep you up to date on all the latest trends and best practices in the B2B creative, design, and marketing worlds. Oh, and of course, follow us on YouTube and your favorite podcast platform to get more creative convos like this delivered straight to your feed every month. That's it for this one. So until next time, thanks for listening.